Good evening and welcome to tonight's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, the place where you're in the know. I'm Ray Taliaferro, your moderator for today. You can find the Commonwealth Club on the internet at commonwealthclub.org. And now it's my pleasure to introduce our special guest, acclaimed political satirist, Will Durst. Let me just say this about this great man. I've known him for many, many years. And there was a time when he looked a little better than he was funny. And over a period of time, he has developed into the type of speaker and the type of person that you really want to be with. When, in fact, you do have him making an assessment of the political, I want to use the word mess, the political operation in the United States of America. And so it is absolutely wonderful that I am able to be his host today. And he will speak a bit, and then, of course, we will be open for questions. So, ladies and gentlemen, please give a great round of applause of thank you and welcome to our friend, the great, the articulate, the handsome, the intelligent, Will Durst.
You get me mixed up with some other folks.
How about Ray Taliaferro? How about Tolliver, Ray Tolliver? That voice that puts so many of us to sleep in a good way,
Yeah.
From 1 to 5 in the morning. Oh, my living God. And it's still, oh, and I miss it. I miss it. It's a voice. It's a treasure of San Francisco. A hand for Mr. Ray Taliaferro. Although, that little comment about he used to be better looking than he was funny, I have no idea what that means. And I can't believe it ever was true. And it certainly isn't now. So, fortunately, being a comic. Thank you all for coming on this propitious solstice day. The longest day of the year. And by speaking, I imagine I'll make it even longer. This is my time now. I'm like an Olympic athlete. I have a career every 4 years for a month because it's an election year. And this is when the audience sometimes might have the hint of a glimmer of a scintilla of a shadow of an idea of what I'm talking about. Because comedy clubs, they don't want to hear political stuff. And it's generational. It really is. My generation was anti-authoritarian. Oh, we're going to stick it to the man. And now, of course, I am the man. And the new generation, you know, they have their own membranes that they want to break through to the other side. And politics, you know, I go out there, well, the government's messed up. And they go, yeah, and? What's your point, gray-haired old fat dude? You know? So the comedy clubs is not where I can go, especially Friday night, the second show at a Friday night where the average age of the audience is 12, and there's a bachelorette party sitting dead stage front, and 8 23-year-old girls, one wearing a lace penis on her forehead, and I'm trying to do jokes about raising the debt ceiling, you know. It's not fair to her. So I want to thank you guys. This is my target demographic. People who read or know someone who does. It's not that difficult. It really isn't. The problem is this peculiar little niche that I have chosen. Because I'm a comic. I'm a political comic. Not a satirist. You say satirist and people think you have goat legs or something. No, a satirist says things he doesn't mean. So Stephen Colbert is a satirist to you know, prove what he actually believes, he says the other thing. And me, I tell jokes. And it's an honorable quest. I really believe it is. There's not many of us because it's not the grease shoot to the big time. TV's not really fond of it. And I'm not talking about, you know, the guys like Bill on HBO or Jon Stewart or Leno or Letterman. You know, you look at those shows and what they do, that's a unique skill. They only see those jokes that they read off that teleprompter. That's the third time they saw that joke ever. So that's a very... But you look, they got 15, 20 writers. I mean, come on, they're the Walmarts of political comedy, you know? I'm a small boutique in Soho. I'm hand-stitching every joke. And there's no outsourcing with Durst Co. Not yet. So I enjoy this. Part of it is because of the difficulty, the degree of difficulty of coming up with a decent joke, and all the time, coming up with the new stuff. Because I'm still in high school. You know, if it's due Monday morning, I'll start it after the Sullivan Show on Sunday night. And, okay, for the kids, 60 minutes, you know. But I'll start it late. But I need that enforced. I need to know someone else is depending on me. And that's why the political stuff, you know, the hard part is not writing the new stuff. The hard part is getting rid of your old stuff. You finally get halfway decent. You tweak and tune a bit for months. Carlin said that the reason that he got out of doing political stuff, George Carlin, was because he couldn't kick his babies out of the nest. You know, and he would perfect the bit. And me, you know, and then you got to, for instance, my William Howard Taft material. Just doesn't have the same bite. You know? Yeah. Reagan was wonderful. Dan J. Danforth Quayle was a cornucopia of delights. Bill Clinton, I never had sexual relations with that woman. He was pointing at Helen Thomas. He meant that woman. Or Hillary Clinton. But he meant... See, I couldn't do that joke at a club. But Bush was, oh, my living God. And I know he sucked for the country and the hemisphere and the planet and the solar system and the universe. But for me, he was pure gold. For 8 wonderful years, the man was like a father to me. I was but a single cog in his No Comic Left Behind program. No, he was. At the end of the Bush administration, for like the last 2 or 3 years, I had this list of verbatim quotes. And I had like 11 of them. And they were straight verbatim quotes. And one of them was my favorite. The problem with the French is they don't have a word for entrepreneur. You know. Exactly. I do that joke at a comedy club, and they stare at me like I'm trying to teach a dog chess. So that's... Yeah. See? And then Obama came along. And the day that Obama, on November 4th, 2008, at 8:03 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, I was on the Golden Gate Bridge. I was going to Marin. I had a gig in Mill Valley that night, on election night. And Wolf Blitzer comes on and says, you know, the 44th president of the United States, 47-year-old Barack Obama. And people on the bridge both ways, on Golden Gate Bridge, are honking all the way across. I look over at my wife. She's crying. And she's not even that liberal. She's not. She subscribes to Soldier of Fortune magazine. I mean, come on. And then we get to Mill Valley, and it's madness. It's you know that little, and Mill Valley, I mean, Jesus. I mean, how precious. You know, it's... No, it's not the real world. You know that. It's like an encapsulated little bubble. It's like a yuppie terrarium is what it is. You know, all the bad hippies with their negative vibes have been banished to toil in the granola mines and hollowed out portions of Mount Tam, you know. But there were drum circles in that square. Exactly, Marin County drum circles, which means half-naked white guys with dreadlocks. And it was like a hobbit village celebrating the destruction of the ring, honest to God. And I'm looking around, and it, you know, in a way, it was the destruction of the ring, you know, after 8 years of Bush. And I'm looking around, and I go, this is incredible. This will never, you know, my career is over. I mean, tell jokes about Obama for crumbs' sake. First 4 months, you couldn't see him. The halo was too bright. That's why it's that birther nonsense. He was born in Kenya. No, he wasn't. He was born in Honolulu in a manger. We all know that. And then he was visited by the three Haoles who presented him with gifts of gold, frankincense, and puka shells from Hilo Hatties. But it was tough. Fortunately, you know, the people on the other side went crazy. And one of the reasons it's hard to take out Obama is because he's so smooth. You know, there's no scandal. There's nothing. You know that McCain people tried it. Hillary's people tried it. They're looking right now. They're digging for anything. Nothing. He's like chamois on chrome. You know what I mean? He's smooth. It's got less friction than rayon pajamas on silk sheets and zero gravity. No matter what you think of his policies, you got to admire his ability not to get involved in them. But then the Tea Party came along, and there was all this, you know, hate. It was, which is what it was in the Tea Party, and you can't tell me it's not racial. If not racist. I mean, some of it, we're taking our country back from the black guy. That's what it means. We all know that's what it means. You know, we're taking our country. Yeah, well, we're trying to take it forward. So get out of the way. We know what you want back. You want the 50s back. You want your water fountains back. You want the fronts of your buses back. Ain't going to happen, angry old white guys. So, and they're, you know, oh, we're up for deficits. Yeah, you didn't give a rat's butt about deficits. During the Bush, he started two wars while cutting taxes, which has never been done in the history of civilization, and now we know why. So that helped me immensely. And then the Republican primary. Oh, my living God. What a soap opera. It was. You had allegations of sexual harassment. You had offshore accounts. You had open marriages. You had Rick Perry, which is George Bush's evil twin. Okay, eviler twin. It was. I mean, it wasn't just me. Pat Robertson said that the field of Republican candidates was too extreme. Pat Robertson said that. It's like having your drug intervention hosted by Lindsay Lohan. And Charlie Sheen's driving the van. Tom Sizemore slumped over registration. All right, I always try to go one too far. It was incredible. And they were playing anybody but Romney. You saw them play the game. Everybody had a lead. Yeah. Well, who we got running for president? Mitt Romney. That's great. Who else we got? And they went through. Sarah Palin led the polls. Donald Trump led the polls. Everybody had their shot. Everybody led the polls at one time. Rick Perry led the polls for 3 weeks before he got into the race. And then he got in and didn't do so well. The third debate. I don't know if you saw the third debate. Where he had the 53-second brain freeze. I watch his stuff so that you don't have to. But he was trying to remember the third department of the cabinet that he was going to excise. And he got the first two. He got commerce and education. And then for 53 seconds, he went, And everybody on the panel, all the other candidates are going, nah. The moderator, me at home, not a big fan. I'm going, oh, dude, come on. Maybe it's written on your hand. And 53 seconds, it was like a minute-long commercial for the Doofus Club for Men. And Ron Paul tried to help out. I'm not making this up. And you got to love Ron Paul because he's like Mr. Burns from The Simpsons. He holds his hands like this. Excellent. And Ron Paul, I love Ron Paul because he makes sense. You know, I mean, he doesn't have a chance in hell of getting elected because he looks like a refugee from the chorus line of the Lollipop Guild. But he makes sense, except he didn't lead the polls. John Huntsman didn't lead the polls. And they're talking about Huntsman as a vice presidential candidate, but I don't think so, because Two Mormons is not a presidential ticket. That's a Broadway musical. You know. But Ron Paul, because he never led the polls, so they would only ask him two or three questions in the debates, because they you know, did it on a curve. If you were leading the polls, you get eight or nine questions, and you weren't. So the first two questions, he would make sense and, you know, be very logical. And then the third one, he's so desperate, he would shoot past the outer orbit of Neptune's third moon. You know, first two, well, you know, I think the Fed is overstepping its constitutional mandate. You know, oh, that makes sense. You know, and we shouldn't be selling guns to people who use them on us. You know, that makes sense. And the Queen of England is using mental telepathy to control the tides. Where the hell did that come from? So 28 seconds into Rick Perry's brain freeze, Ron Paul tries to help out his fellow Texan, and he goes, EPA? And this is when you realize that Rick Perry is not qualified to be president, because he immediately goes, no, that's not it. Governor Perry, opportunity at the door? You sure? I'll tell him. And for another 25 seconds, oops. Oh, man, it was, oh. Yeah, and he never led in the polls again. I mean, he shot down to third or fourth, and that was it for him. He said that God told him to run for president. Of course, Michelle Bachmann said that God told her to run for president. So either somebody's fibbing or God is off his meds again. And I don't know about you, but I hate when that happens. We get such mixed messages. Michelle led the polls. Michelle Bachmann, she led the polls for 2 weeks after winning the Iowa straw poll. And she got her picture on the cover of Newsweek magazine. It was a bit controversial because she had this creepy, messianic, kind of cross-eyed gaze. It was, and all her supporters complained, right? And, oh, you bad magazine, you cherry-picked a creepy-looking photo on purpose. And Newsweek responded by putting the entire photo shoot online and said, oh, yeah, which one would you have picked? That's true. That is true. And she was always so close, Michelle. She was always. She went to Concord, New Hampshire, and said, it's great to be where the shot heard around the world was fired, but that was actually Concord, Massachusetts. 60 miles south, so close. And then she went to a small town in Iowa. She said, it's great to be here in the birthplace of John Wayne. But it was actually the birthplace of John Wayne Gacy, the serial killer. Proving how sometimes close can be so very, very far away. And she's a member of the House Intelligence Committee. You can't make stuff up like this.
It's very convenient.
I should carry one of these around with me. Michelle Bachmann, House Intelligence Committee member. It's like saying Democratic Leadership Council or Republican Ethics Committee or George W. Bush think tank. Larry King Live. Oh, you're so cruel for laughing at that. You are. www.amish.com. There actually is one. Yeah, I think it's run by the Pennsylvania Tourism Board. I'm not sure. Herman Cain said God told him to run for president. And Herman was so much fun to watch because, you know, nobody expected him to win. Even he didn't. He wasn't running for president. He's an African-American running for the Republican nomination. Hello? It's like Joan Rivers applying to the Miss Aryan Nations pageant. I mean, come on. It was a statement. He was auditioning for his own show on Fox News. That's what it was. But it allowed him to speak authentically. Because every other politician, you know, you would ask him a question, you could hear the wooden gears clink into place. So they're searching for, you know, pat answer four. And he was so loose and easy. And then the tsunami of sleaze happened, you know, the classic case of he said, she 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 said. And then it was so dispiriting, you know, when he, because it was every politician, you know, the same formula, you know, Ensign, Vitter, Sanford, Edwards, you know, they all, the unfortunately named Congressman Weiner, they all do the same thing, you know. It wasn't me. And then, might have been me, but it only happened once. And then, maybe a couple times, I gotta go. Yeah, it would have been fun to see Herman Cain win. Just to imagine, you know, dyed-in-the-wool racist and in rural precincts of northeast Mississippi going to the polls on November 6th having to choose between two black men. Pow! Damn it, we got another one. Get the mop. Rick Santorum, he led the polls. He was pummeled with money by Romney. He was kind of an unusual candidate. It was like Mr. Rogers with rabies or something. You know, he had the sweater vest, and then he doesn't believe in contraception. You know, really? We're fighting birth control? Now? Today? What's next? The transistor radio is the devil's spatula, you know. Our descent into debauchery began with the introduction of the loom. But he never had a shot. He had no money. He actually bragged about how frugal he was, that he flew middle seats on United while campaigning. Really? We're supposed to hand the presidency to a guy who can't find anybody in his staff? We could work a seat locator map on an airline website? Really? Then there was Newt Gingrich and, you know, the evil cherub, who was doing fine until he said he wanted to go to the moon, and everybody said, go ahead. It's true. And Newt was killing in what they call low-information voter states. You know this demographic, low-information voters? It allows you to say stupid people right in front of them. It does. Low information. I swear to God, the demographers have this. Yes, he's doing well in low information voter states. Because, like in Mississippi, 52% of Republicans still believe that Obama is Muslim. And that doesn't include the other percentage that thinks he's Muslim. Which is a loosely woven cotton fabric. And yes, indeed, this does confuse them, but they've gotten used to living there. President Newt. Yeah, even the staunchest Republicans kind of inwardly shuddered at that one. You know, President Newt. It's like saying Pope Dennis Hopper or Secretary of Housing and Urban Development Kardashian. And then there's Mitt.
And they just don't like him. He's got the charisma of a plastic picnic fork with three of the tines snapped off. I don't know. I don't know what the deal is. And his staff says, oh, you know, the long campaign made him a better candidate. I don't know. The only thing the guy's done in 5 years has been run for president. I'm pretty sure his learning curve has used up all its bendy parts. So he doesn't look like a... He looks too much like a president. He looks like a Hollywood president. You know, like he was assembled from an IKEA box. It'll be interesting to see him in the debates with Obama. No, but it debates don't matter. I mean, if you think about it, Bush lost all six debates. You know, he lost three to Gore, and he lost three to Kerry, so debates don't really matter. But, you know, I just think that Romney may be electile dysfunctional. No, I mean, he goes on CNN to say he's not concerned about the very poor. We kind of knew that. Besides, your definition of very poor probably consists of anybody whose private jet seats less than 12. You know who he is? He's Thurston P. Howell before the island. Which makes Obama what? Gilligan? Or the professor? Well, he looks like a little buddy, but, you know, he acts like the professor. He tries to build an electric eye door opener for the hut, but he can't fix the quarter-sized hole in the hull of the boat. You know. Lost you on that one, didn't I? They both seem a little out of touch. I mean, what was it Obama said the other day, that the private sector is doing fine? Well, maybe his private sector is doing fine. My private sector could use a little help. Maybe a blue pill. Okay, I'm telling you more than you need to know. And it's about there's so much left. And I have the best job because I get to watch, you know, the national TV. And I watch the national news every night so that you don't have to. And you know, the ads will drive you nuts. Mostly because every ad is for Flomax and Prevacid and Lipitor and Cialis. People with clogged pipes or leaky pipes or pipes that need extending. Honest to God, I'm convinced it's some sort of plumbing outreach program. They're not 30-second ads. They're at least a minute, sometimes two, because they're required by law to include all the bad stuff that can happen to you. And they don't want to freak you out, so they try to slide by in this perky monitor. Side effects may include, but are not limited to, headache, nausea, flatulence, dizziness, dizzy flatulence, weight loss, weight gain, hives, chives, weird rashes on the inner thighs, involuntary muscle spasms, cement-like bowel obstructions, anthrax, dysentery, bovine spongiform encephalopathy, flesh-eating bacteria, explosive diarrhea, chlamydia, leprosy, Glock elbow, nickel dick phobia, cat scratch fever, idiopathic river slobber syndrome, Ebola, elephantiasis, partial total paralysis, total partial paralysis, total paralysis, suicidal thoughts or actions, death-like coma, near death, death, and fatigue. And they always put it in the middle of the commercial, because if they put it at the end, everybody would go, damn. They have to have time for the purple butterfly to land on the frowny blob. So I got so much more. And I'm doing a show every Tuesday at a place called The Marsh in San Francisco. It's called Elect to Laugh. It's every Tuesday until Election Day, and I have some little cards here. And so you guys come, because it changes every week, and there's only 20 left, and it's fun to watch the morphing. A couple of you I see in the audience have been to the show, and he can say good things or not. But yeah, it's Marsh is on 22nd in Valencia, and so it's you got the conventions coming up, and then all the ads, none of which we'll see because Northern California, you know, we're not even blue, we're beyond blue, we're indigo, we're post blue, we're eggplant, aubergine, periwinkle, you know, and we know the difference. And then of course there's going to be another. A default possibility. They're going to the debt ceiling again. We almost defaulted last. It could happen again. And then you know what happens. If America defaults, we have to move back in with Britain. Yeah, you think it's embarrassing going home after school? Try waiting 226 years. Anyhow, I'm set, and it's half hour, so I'm done. Thanks. Is that right?
Oh, indeed.
Is that right?
There you go.
Questions?
Anybody with questions? I have a lot that you've already written. And let me start off. Who would you, given the great artist that you are in your profession, who would you rather see as president that would help you? would it be Mr. Romney or Brother Obama?
The best thing for me, approaching a Sarah Palin, jumping in, which probably won't happen because she was, oh, my living God. For those of us going cold turkey and Bush, she was a double dose of methadone. So the best thing for political comedy would be a Romney-Trump ticket. Well, think about it. Trump would make Romney look presidential. Trump would make Lou Ferrigno look presidential. Make a guy in the street corner in a gorilla suit twirling a sign look presidential. And just imagine the bumper sticker. Romney-Trump, we like to fire people. But that's not going to happen. They can't be that stupid twice in a row. Can they?
It's kind of interesting, Will, that you mentioned Donald Trump. Looking through the questions, the first five, what do you think of Donald Trump?
Well, how ridiculous is it that he's a leader of the birther movement? You know? I mean, that he won't get off it. He just keeps it. Well, people, you know, I want to see his birth certificate. Well, we want to see your DNA.
Yeah.
I think first you should prove to America that you're a carbon-based life form.
Who do you think should run for president from each party in 2016?
Oh, my living God. You know, what is today? Today is the 20th of June, which means blah, 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 139 days left until the election. Do you know how long 139 days is in politics? And now you're asking about 2016? Hillary.
Yeah.
That's all I care about. And I would not mind seeing Obama dump Biden. I think we should actually dump Biden, have a dump Biden movement. And family or sickness or something, and have Hillary be VP. That might help. They might need the help. It's going to be close because Romney's got money. He's got so much money. He's not the poster child of the 1%. He's the poster child of the 0.00001% of the 1%. He looks more like Gordon Gekko than Michael Douglas.
How do you believe that Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert have impacted the political humor?
Well, I think it's the audience for political humor has always been out there, but it's not. I mean, look at, you know, I mean, in a city of 670,000, and we have, what, maybe 150, 200 in here tonight. You know, it's a sliver of people who are interested in, who can find, who are okay with laughing at something that many other people find serious and sacred. You know, and I think, what was it that Lincoln said? If we don't laugh, we cry. So that's the only way I get through it. Because I get so incensed. I got in a huge argument with some guy over Prop 29 the other day. And he was against Prop 29, the one that put $1 per pack on cigarettes and went to cancer research. And he said, well, what are your arguments against it? You know, the fact that the cigarette companies, and it was just the cigarette companies, spent $70 million in California and defeated it 50.2 to 49.8. And, why were you against? Well, you know, the money wouldn't have been spent in, we don't know what it was. It was for cancer research! Well, it might have been out of state. Where? What state? North Dakota, the big cancer research community of North Dakota. So I got so angry, and I'm screaming at him in the hallway of the Fairmont, and I'm leaving, and I'm going, cancer research, and that was my fight. But he would say, cancer research, and I'm just walking away. So I realized that I have to find humor in it. Otherwise, I'll die in a bar fight.
Now you've mentioned a first lady, and I just wonder if it fits the answer to this wonderful question from our audience: who is your choice for the most tolerant first lady in modern times?
All the stuff that's been thrown at Obama, you got to give it to Michelle. The fact that they criticize her anti-obesity program. For crumbs, who's pro-obesity? The Husky Casket Corporation? Angioplasty Balloons Are Us? The Louisiana Tourism Board?
She's a saint.
Yeah. This is a very, very intellectual question, and I'm choosing you to answer. Could you comment on the tension between democracy and capitalism now in the United States?
Well, I have a problem with the Occupy movement in that it is too democratic. I think the Occupy movement, when they were focused on corporate greed and income inequality, that it made more sense. But the problem with the term liberal means accepting of many viewpoints. So as soon as they set up camp, you know, in come the free Tibet people, all right, you're over there. And then the hemp contingent always shows up. All right, there's your table. And the organic farmers and the sea turtle people spent a lot of money on those costumes, and they're going to wear them, damn it. And... you know, so that's what happened to the Democrats, you know, and they always say, well, the Democrats aren't, the Democrats aren't a real party. It's like herding cats. And the Republicans have de-evolved into a single cell amoeba. They become the tax cut zombies from the planet. No. Their entire negotiating stance with Obama for 3.5 years. No. No, sir. No way. Let me think. No. I'll sleep on it. No. What are you, 12? So that's my answer.
Please explain how many facets are part of the GOP, Tea Party, Eisenhower types, etc.
Well, it used to be. You know, it used to be Eisenhower types, Rockefeller types, Goldwater types. You know, Nixon would be drummed out of the party for being a flaming liberal these days, so. I think the Tea Party is, I don't know if their influence is waning or if it's becoming more concentrated in pockets, but it's, I think it's scary, you know, the polarization, you know. We want to work with the president. Yeah, the same way a 5-year-old with a magnifying glass wants to work with ants.
the way a coyote wants to utilize a nest of baby ducks. So it's, I've never, you know, and I'm not that old, but in my lifetime I haven't seen this kind of polarization. I remember when Teddy Kennedy used to, you know, go to a bar with his arms slung over Simpson or Hatch or Teddy Kennedy, probably a lot of guys. But, you know, that kind of thing doesn't happen anymore.
Mm-hmm. If you ran Fox News, what would happen?
Cartoons. Yeah. 24-hour Looney Tune cartoons. Because I think they own the library.
What do you think is the best piece of material you've ever received from a politician?
You know, the Wiener thing was wonderful. Just because of his name. It was his name, you know, and that was his own fault, because you get to choose how other people pronounce your name. He could have done the Boner Boehner thing. You know what I'm talking about? Speaker of the House, John Boehner, has 11 brothers and sisters. They're all boners. That is true. His mother's a boner. His father, well, 12 kids. You do the math. And Weiner could have gone with Weiner, which is still a lousy name for a politician. Apt for a Democrat, perhaps. But wow, wrong crowd. Okay. Or he could have gone whole hog, which is what I would have. Yes, we spell it W-E-I-N-E-R, but it's pronounced Schultz. In Wisconsin, we do a lot of that. Wisconsin.
Do you feel that...
God, I love your voice. Really, it's a jewel. It's a treasure of the city.
I love yours too, Will.
You know, on Noon Tuesday when they shoot off the air raid siren, it should be your voice. Because it would calm everybody down, you know.
This is just a test.
Right.
Yeah, so we wouldn't flip out.
No, do you think, in the way that you do, conjure your thoughts... That
you're qualifying that a lot, aren't you?
That there would be any way that Barack Obama would lose re-election?
I think it's entirely possible. I think they discovered how to pummel with money. And it's all about money. It's all about Citizens United. And, you know, I think what they discovered with what they did to Newt Gingrich in Florida was the Romney people outspent him 17-1 on television. And that's how they drove him down. The same thing happened to Santorum in Michigan and Pennsylvania. And I'm afraid the Koch brothers are going to decide that the presidency is worth 0.5% of their net worth, which their net worth is $25 billion apiece for two brothers. So he puts in, you know, $250 million into Ohio, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. Boom, it's over. You know, that's what frightens me. But the only good part is that Romney may be such a bad candidate that he may step up. I mean, he went to a picnic and made fun of a supporter's cookies. Did you see that? I'm not a big NASCAR fan, but some of my best friends are owners, you know. And he accuses Obama of engaging in class war, which is like someone driving a tank whining that the sound of the crushed skulls is making it hard to hear the radio. Okay, that's a little tough. I will admit, you handled it well.
When you think in terms of Democrats and Republicans, do you think that the country will ever see another member of a party achieve the presidency? Will it always be a Democrat or a Republican?
I would love, you know, and the only way to do that is to start at
the local level and build up a third party. There was a third party for a while. I remember Ross Perot's Reform Party, which Pat Buchanan single-handedly depth charged when he became the nominee, and then quit campaigning the 2 weeks before the, so that they wouldn't be on the ballot next time, because if they got 5%, they'd be on the ballot. And he single-handedly just brought it down, and I wonder what that was worth to the establishment. But it could happen. Yeah, and not going to be me. I ran for mayor, man. Ran for mayor of San Francisco, 1987. Came in fourth out of 11. Got 2% of the vote. I spent $1,500, and the three guys who beat me out, Boaz, Agnos, and Molinari, each spent $1 million apiece. So on a dollar per vote basis, I am mayor of San Francisco. Unfortunately, it doesn't work out that way, as Meg Whitman found out. Is this just for me, or is this for both of us? Just me?
When you think in terms of routines that you are going to develop or you continue, well, let me just ask you, how often do you develop a whole new routine to face an audience?
I do it incrementally. I will add a piece here and a piece there, and I write a nationally syndicated humor column. It's not picked up by many of the big papers. It's mostly small papers, and I never know which ones until I get an angry email from Escanaba, Michigan, or Prescott, Arizona, or something. But it forces me to write, so every week I write a little something. And but they're two different voices, the stand-up voice, because that audience is hungry. And my timing on stage is I'm joke. I'm a joke hose with a thesaurus is what I am.
Yeah.
When you write, it's easier to, you know, set something up in the beginning and then make a couple of wry comments and then close it off at the end. And it's a different discipline. This one doesn't work either. Should I just yell? I could talk louder. Maybe I should talk in the Ray's microphone. Would it give me that great voice?
Oh, no. I just... what do you think of Supreme Court decisions this year? Or have they done anything to allow you to think at all?
Yeah,
about
it's
them?
Amazing. Healthcare. I'm so glad healthcare passed, and they're going to dump it. You know, it all depends on what side of the bed Anthony Kennedy woke up on. You know what I mean? Our entire future. Because look at me, I'm a schmuck comic. It's not like I'm an employee of the city of San Francisco or the Commonwealth Club. Mm. You know, I'm an itinerant minstrel. I wander the country dropping my little chuckle pellets in hamlets all over this grand land of ours. And it's not like I belong to the Comics, Clowns, and Jesters Union. I'm not a member of Congress. So I'm glad. I'm glad health care passed. I need it. I really do. And healthy San Francisco is great. If you get sick in San Francisco, if you get sick in Daly City, you're screwed. Of course, a lot of people are sick at Daly City, so. Kidding. It's a joke. That's what I do.
You mentioned him a moment ago, and someone would like
him
to know.
Him who?
Well, I'm
he
about
who
to
him.
Mention. You mentioned him a moment ago. Do you think, because of the outcome of what we're going through now, it's the end of Donald Trump?
Oh, I don't know. He's such a publicity hound. Like, he was going to run for president. He was never going to run for president. It was a dodgy feint to publicize this stupid reality show. He can't run for president. For one thing, America's never, he'll never release his tax records. He'll never release his tax records. Not that it mattered much to Romney either, but, and this country has never had a president with a comb over for a very good reason.
People think about it. 8-9 times a week the president gets in and out of the rotor wash of the Marine One helicopter. Can you imagine Trump's hair whipping to the heavens like some sort of sentient shrubbery signaling a secret society of Navajo fringe talkers? Gets it caught in the rotor, and we end up with an Isadora Duncan sequence on our hands.
And let me remind all of you who come to the Commonwealth Club for these wonderful events that those of you who didn't write a question, you can certainly go to the microphone and speak to one of the greatest of all that we've ever had in San Francisco, one of the most blessed by God Almighty in the field of humor, merged with extreme intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, ma'am.
I love your show on KQED, now a long time ago.
Thank you.
On that show, you pointed out that the Supremes are being selected from only two law schools, Harvard and Stanford, I think. I find this very disturbing, and I don't think people really understand the implications of this. Do you have any further remarks about it? Because I'm scared.
Well, I'm a state school guy myself. I went to the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. I couldn't even get into UW. Couldn't even get into Madison. Actually, I could, but it was a party school, and I didn't need help on that one. But if you look at the presidents, I mean, Obama went to Occidental, and then he went to Columbia, and then he went to Harvard Law, and Romney went to Stanford for a year, and then he went to Brigham Young, and then he went to Harvard Business School. So they're both Harvard graduates, and yeah, so this country, man, we got to go.
But we're talking about the Supreme Court.
The Supreme Court, yeah. Well, since then, when I did a piece, I used to have a show on KQED called Durst Amendment, and we did the 9 Supreme Court justices at the time, and it was just like that. You went down Stanford, Harvard, Harvard, Stanford, Stanford, Harvard, Stanford. You know, I mean, they were every one of them. So, and that's all. But yeah, we're the rest of us are kind of locked out.
Yeah. Yes, ma'am.
Why do they call it Obamacare when I understood he allowed the Republicans to have like 220 amendments to it? And then they still weren't happy with it, but he got it.
You know, there was one committee that demanded that they speak on behalf, and they wanted the committee, the Republicans on the committee, demanded that their amendments be included, and they included those amendments, and they still voted against it. Yeah, yeah. So it's, yeah.
But then you say Obamacare and Romney care, but it doesn't sound.
It doesn't have to make sense. It doesn't have to make. Do you see the guy who? I mean, the death penalty. It's 2,400 pages long, or 2,700. They're still not sure. I know. Shouldn't you be sure? A lot of stuff can happen in 300 pages. I've read Harry Potter, you know. And I think the length is one of the reasons that, you know, Republicans were able to demonize it. You know, this bill has provisions to kill the elderly. And no Democrat went, no, it doesn't. Because they weren't sure. Remember the guy on the cover of Newsweek during the healthcare riots? He had the sign, "Stop socializing America and hands off my Medicare." How do you reason with this guy?
Yeah.
Dude, that's two different signs.
Yeah.
You wonder why he's so opposed to public health care. He's obviously intimate with the failures of the public education system.
Yeah. Sir?
What do you think of our most recent mayoral election in San Francisco and the results?
Oh, I don't mind the mayoral election. What I'm happy about is the sheriff's election. I think it's wonderful that our sheriff is familiar with the booking policy of our city. Is this a crazy town or what? This town will drive you nuts.
This and I love San Francisco. I love it for so many different reasons. The food, the view, the climate. I love it for the fact that you can be anybody here, that we don't judge you based on your color or your creed. You know, that you could be a red-bearded Lithuanian vegan dwarf in the Golden Showers. Come on down. we get a street festival for that. You know, I love that about San Francisco. But then again, the city will drive you nuts, like the naked people. You know about the naked people? There's no law against being naked in San Francisco. Someone discovered this, and it's always people who you don't want to see naked who insist on getting naked. And then the naked people found each other. They started congregating up at Market and Castro, that little triangle park up there. And then they started going into the merchants, naked merchants, you know, 7-Eleven restaurants. And the merchants are going, dude, naked people. So our supervisors considered this, and then they came up with a plan. Did they get rid of, did they make a municipal code against being naked? No. If you're naked and you go in a restaurant, you got to bring your own towel. Your own towel. It's the Arthur Dent solution. Bring your towel. Towel in a restaurant, naked people, where's their money? None. Sorry. You know what I mean? Jelly bean?
Kind of interesting, only to the extent that I was in a section of town of which you spoke and got out of the car and couldn't believe the next guy to pull in to get gas was completely naked. He did use the right hose.
You mean the one on the right?
Yeah.
That's good.
I couldn't believe it.
This is public radio, after all. You mean the one on the right? There was down by KGO. I was doing KGO. I was doing the Brian Copeland show. And it's Sunday afternoon, and there was a naked guy on roller skates. So there was all sorts of movement. And, oh, Jesus. This town will drive you nuts in another way, you know, because the food is so good that there's such competition amongst... It's hard to find a bad meal in San Francisco, but, you know, just because of the competition, as opposed to Augusta, Georgia, where it's not that hard to find a bad meal. But in San Francisco, you know, sometimes you just want a cheeseburger. You don't need it covered in a mango chutney aioli. That's a lovely roasted sun-dried tomato basil reduction. Midwest, we call that ketchup.
I should even ask you this again.
Uh-oh.
No. What do you think is the best piece of material you've ever received from a politician?
Just Bush. Just his Bushness. He was such a gift from day one. Because he had that kind of, you know. And he looked goofy. And the thing about Bush was you always knew where you stood. I mean, Obama is so contained that he says passionate things dispassionately. You know, you need the press secretary to tell you, oh, no, he was all ticked off there. Really? We had no idea. Oh, yeah. His jaw was clenched and stuff. And might have been tofu caught in his bridge work. We don't know. But Bush was like a human emoticon. Yeah? You always knew there was happy and sad and angry, you know. And he was cuddly. You look like you pick him up, he'd make those tickle me Elmo noises.
Three of our wonderful guests want to know from the base of your heart, your soul, your feeling, for a great country. When do you think we will get a woman president?
2016. 2016?
Oh,
16. I 2016.
See.
I see. Yeah. Yeah, I think it's 4 years and 139 days.
What?
yeah, that's what I'm thinking. I don't know. Hillary will be, what, 68 then, I think? Obama is going to be 51 in August. He's a Leo. Romney is a Pisces. Mm. Yeah, I know. Romney's 65, Obama's 50. What else? I'm trying to think of all the... Because I'm hopefully writing a book. And it's going to be an e-book because nobody reads anymore. So it's going to be an e-book. So I'm compiling all these facts and about Romney and Obama. But, yeah, I would love to see Hillary. But that would make Bill the first dude.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah. I'll take ambassadorship to Sweden.
We have another question with the first woman president. Is there, what do you think, and I guess it sounds very sexist to even ask it, but what do you think would be a major change in our governmental approach should a woman become president?
Oh, I don't know. Her Majesty or the first, you know, President of the United States. No, POTUS would remain the same. What do you say when the president enters the room? You know, hail to the chief. Chiefess? No, chief is fine. I don't think there would be a change. You know?
Ah.
I don't see a change. You know? I think the biggest change would be what you call the first guy.
Mm-hmm.
You call him the first man.
I see.
That would be Adam.
Yeah.
Maybe just call him Adam. And then we got Adam. What do you mean, the first man? Yeah. Adam and Eve. Be fun to see Bill back in politics. Man, Bill was good for me, too. Bill was, yeah. Reagan was good. Reagan, yeah. Not going to bring him back, though. Cheney was good. Cheney refuses to die.
Oh.
He does 5 heart attacks, and the man lives. He is so evil, hell keeps spitting him back. And then the transplant. Oh, come on, that was no transplant. That was an installation. And the poor donor, can you imagine? And I know they keep them anonymous, but if I had been the donor, I would have crawled out of the grave to scoop my organ back. I don't...
They want to know, someone wants to know.
They do?
Well, yes.
En masse? They want to know.
Will there ever be a party as big and as well known and as important as the Democrat and the Republican Party? Do you think a third party will ever encroach upon the political scene?
The Tupperware Party. No. the Whigs. I think we should bring back the Whig Party or the Federalists or no, I don't. Not in our lifetime. We're too entrenched. There's just two of us. Yeah. Choose your point. And you know what drives me nuts is, there's not a dime's worth of difference. Yeah, well, there is, actually. You know, Romney and Obama. Hi.
Characters around the world.
No. It's too complicated. You know, and I don't know nothing about it. You know, I don't know nothing to begin with. You know, I don't. I try to just concentrate on national stuff and once in a while a little local thing. But, you know, it's too hard to keep up nationally. You know, they blame Obama for the Secret Service scandal down in Colombia. He didn't have anything to do with it. How was he supposed to? Did the Secret Service ask to be paid in ones? I mean, how was... And the hooker wanted $800, the Secret Service guy gave her $30, and we fired him? Put him in charge of Pentagon procurement. This man has skills. Yes, ma'am.
What do you think about the recent devolvement of separation between church and state? That's got to be a lot of material for you.
Well, it was Rick Santorum was, you know, I mean, he wasn't old-fashioned. He was Old Testament, you know. He doesn't believe in global warming, doesn't believe in evolution, and ironically, he is his own best argument. You know, he doesn't believe in public education. He's homeschooling his own kids. They asked him why. He said, well, for the first 150 years, presidents homeschooled their kids. Yeah, for the first 150 years, the sheep barn and the living room were the same place. Yeah. So, yeah, I think much big separation, bolder line. Yeah.
Indeed. Sir?
So the election is typically decided by the moderates, those in the middle.
Swing, yeah.
And how much do you think political satire and comedians in your field have an influence on those individuals?
Oh, I don't think at all. I don't think at all. I think maybe all we can do is plant the seeds of doubt. We can't change the way people think. All we can do is, what I try to do is I say, I pay attention to this. You don't have to come see my show, and I'll translate it and put it through this lens and try to make complex concepts into simple jokes. And that's what I try to do. So once in a while, we can plant the seed of empowerment because people feel powerless. They think the situation is so complicated. So we can simplify it and say, no, it's just, you're right. It is black and white. It is wrong, right and wrong. Man. That's what I think we can do. Milady?
Hi. I'd like to see you on television. I never have. Are you still appearing like on...
No.
KQED?
No, my career's over. This is
And
this is a swan song.
Do you tour
known as the farewell concert.
No,
I do like current TV or CNN or MSNBC. I do
just
stuff
cable?
Like that. Yeah. Yeah.
And do you tour the country during the year to
Yeah, I mostly do corporate gigs. Can't do the clubs. I can do theaters. Have a bit of a residual draw there, but mostly corporates because they're businessmen. And, you know, they can see the humor on both sides because they got to do business with these cretinous toads, you know. So they can see the humor and they have to pay attention to what's going on. So a lot of corporate gigs, yeah. Yeah, isn't that odd? You know, I thought they would be the ones that would run away from me fastest. But I always wanted to do a cruise, you know, but they're so afraid of offending anybody, and I'm guaranteed to offend somebody at some point. So I want you to, that's why my show is not for everybody. So don't come to my show at the Marsh every Tuesday until the election. Really, don't come unless, mm-hmm. you know, it's industrial strength comedy, you know. Jokes, you want the jokes? You can't handle the jokes. You can't handle the jokes because in places you don't talk about parties, you want me on this stage. You need me on this stage. Sorry.
When you think...
Sorry, overreacted.
Well, we just have time for one more.
What do we got? Anybody?
Comment.
Bueller? Anybody? Sir?
Yes.
That Romney's being railroaded in... Oh, Ross Mercurimi is being railroaded?
By the Chronicle, by Willie Brown, and by Facets of the City... for the guy for grabbing the wife's arm, I mean, come on, folks.
Yeah, it does seem like, but it's we don't know what happened. All we got is her version, which seems to have been sanitized recently. You know, it's her version seems to have changed. So that's really a sticky wicket, you know. And you may be right, but I don't think so. No. I don't.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Yeah.
It's, you know, a little bit of wife abuse, you know. it just hit her a little, you know. What, she can't take a punch? Kidding.
I think you brought us right to the time when it's time to say goodbye.
Yeah,
to,
that's the joke I wanted to end on, too, audience. Because, yeah. You know, I think it really distills my message. Hey, I want to thank you, Ray Taliaferro. Thank you so much for hosting this.
Oh,
it's an
you.
Honor. It's an honor, sir, being grilled by you.
Thank you very much. And thank all of you.
And thank the Commonwealth Club for having the cojones and...
thank you.
Yeah, for doing this. Thank you, Mr. Dobbins. Thank you.
Thank you.
One more time! Thank you, and you, and you, and you, and especially you.